Welcome to Living Above the Drama. I'm your host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio, and today my guest is Dr. Dennis Charney. He is an American psychiatrist and researcher who is one of the world's leading experts in the neurobiology and treatment of mood and anxiety disorders. He is the author of numerous books and over 500 papers and chapters in his area of specialty. Dr. Charney was elected into the Institute of Medicine in 2000 and has won countless awards and honors for his work. Since 1992, he has been listed in every edition of the Best Doctors in America. He is a professor of psychiatry, professor of neuroscience, and professor of pharmacology and systems therapeutics, as well as the current Ann and Joel Ehrenkranz Dean of the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai in New York City. He has led pioneering research on the psychobiological mechanisms of human resilience to stress. The second edition of his groundbreaking book, Resilience, shares his co-author collaborated research on a wide range of trauma survivors, including combat veterans, civilian children, adults with PTSD, prisoners of war, special forces, soldiers, and Navy SEALs. While his accomplishments and work are celebrated and recognized around the world, this is not the end of the story. In August of 2016, Dr. Charney, who has spent his illustrious career researching resilience in trauma survivors, became a trauma survivor himself when he was shot at close range by a disgruntled former employee as he was leaving a coffee shop in his neighborhood. Dr. Charney, I am so pleased to have you on the show and for you to share your remarkable story with the audience. So, welcome.
Thank you.
Let's start by having you share with us first the research you've been doing, the remarkable research you've been doing, and the whole subject of resilience.
Yes. So my colleague and I, Stephen Southwick, who's a professor at Yale, have been studying resilience since the mid-1990s. And the reason we decided to study resilience is that we were investigating the causes of post-traumatic stress disorder and depression, and were motivated to develop new treatments. So we thought by studying individuals who had been traumatized in some fashion in their life, but showed resilience by either not developing problems with depression or PTSD, or if they did, they recovered. By studying them, we felt we could come up with new ideas in developing treatment for depression and PTSD. So ever since then, we've been studying resilient individuals.
Yes, I know. And the pre-interview we were sharing, you gave 10 factors, which are quite wonderful because they kind of parallel and go along with so many other research studies that have been done with disease resistance and with moving on and being able to start lives over after some, you know, terrible things, wars and all kinds of loss and what have you. So these 10 factors, which you outline in your book, which is, I believe, the second edition of the book, we'd love to have you talk with them. The first one you gave us was realistic optimism, which we will hear later on in the show, is something that really came in handy for you as an individual. So you want to talk about the realistic optimism of resilience.
Yeah, so we studied, as you mentioned, many different kinds of individuals of all different ethnic groups who experienced different kinds of trauma. And one of the things that came out in learning from these resilient trauma victims is the importance of having a positive attitude. Optimism is strongly related to resilience. Realistic optimism, meaning that you had a positive attitude and you thought in a realistic way that you were going to recover. You're going to get out of your situation. Mm-hmm. It turns out that optimism is in part genetic. There have actually been genetic studies showing that optimism can relate to your genes, but it also can be learned. Optimism, and in fact, resilience in general, Well, it's genetic. Genetic is genes are not destiny. You can make yourself a more resilient individual.
Well, genes are fairly mutable, aren't they, doctor? I mean, we know that if a pregnant woman drinks or smokes, we know that there are many different influences environmentally that can actually affect our genetics, and we can pass them on to our children. They can cause all kinds of cellular damage and disease. So that whole idea behind genetics and optimism, that's a good thing. Tell us, now, when you were developing new treatments, for people, did working with them and optimism, did any of that come into play in your treatment protocol?
Yes, definitely. Being a pessimist is not healthy, and so you work with patients in having them see the bright side of things, and also being optimistic that they were going to recover and perhaps even get stronger as a result of their trauma. And it turns out that optimism can be learned. There's a form of therapy called cognitive behavioral therapy, which in part is based on working with people to develop realistic optimism to be part of their recovery.
Right. And so in your studies, did you take something like cognitive behavioral therapy and apply that in some of the cases with people who were trying to recover and you were doing the research on them? Did you apply that? And what were the outcomes like when you did?
Yes, we and many others in the field of PTSD and depression, have found that cognitive behavioral therapy is effective. Sometimes it works by itself, and other times it is used in combination with other therapies as well as medicine.
Right. Now, could you define that? That's very exciting news. There are a lot of people listening here who are going to say, wow, there's hope. Cognitive behavioral therapy, it obviously is behavior that people are consciously aware of. Could you just describe it compared to, say, some of the more, talk-focused therapies that are out there?
Well, the more talk-focused therapies, tend to delve into your past and try to help you understand certain patterns of your behavior based on, your upbringing and other kinds of experiences, and that can be helpful. Cognitive behavioral therapy deals more with the here and now, what's happening today in your life, and helps you through homework assignments and similar things to talk about how did you spend your day. What were your thought patterns? What was making you feel pessimistic? What was not realistic in terms of feeling pessimistic? So it works in changing patterns of behavior through dealing with issues that you are dealing with every day.
So it's a pretty hands-on approach for the patient to be able to feel in control, to be able to understand what the theory is, what they're looking for, and what they can actually do organically and personally to affect a change. So it sounds like a pretty positive prescription for PTSD.
Yeah, it's a very active therapy. Some people with PTSD feel helpless, and this type of therapy is geared to reverse that feeling of helplessness.
Fantastic. Now, you also said the number two, you gave us 10 factors, the number two factor was having a role model. And again, what's so fascinating, and we're gonna wait towards the end of the show because you have a story. Listeners, this is a story. I mean, you talk about a classic, a textbook story in terms of when someone is an expert in a field and they are really renowned in it and they know it inside and out. And then they have an opportunity to actually apply their knowledge and their research and their brilliance. And this is exactly where this story is going to go. But we're going to hear more about having a role model when we get to Dr. Charney's fascinating and somewhat disturbing story. Having a role model, when we talk about that.
Yeah, so role models are very important in life in general and certainly in developing resilience. And you can find role models in your own life, and you don't generally have one role model, that you can have different role models that you want to emulate depending on what you're dealing with. So that in many cases, working through a trauma, working to become a more resilient person, starts with role models. They can be someone close to you. They can be somebody that you may not even know closely, but that you're inspired by their personal story and you apply it to your own life.
And I'm sure that most of us could probably, if we had to, if we were going through something very difficult, could identify or recognize role models. As you said, it doesn't even have to be someone that we know. It could be someone who's written a book or someone who has, you know, trained or educated people and has educational material available. So that's another very positive thing for the listener to note. The third thing, which was really interesting because we were trying to find the right words. We said moral compass, we said integrity, we said doing the right thing. But the third thing is having a sense of having kind of a moral structure or an integrity. Can you talk more to that? Because that sounds like a big one.
Yeah. And I would just add one other thing to the role model issue, and that is self-help groups can be very helpful because in those groups, you're going to identify with other individuals who have gone through something similar in your life, and they can be a role model. So, as I mentioned before, role models can be found in very different places in your life.
Right.
Now,
right.
Go
ahead. What were you saying? Yes.
Yeah, so you mentioned a moral compass.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also very important. And what happens in developing a personal moral compass is that you develop a set of core beliefs that very few things can shatter. That if you've been traumatized, that doesn't take away who you are, what your core beliefs are about life, the kind of moral person, you know, that you are. You know, for many people, that involves faith and spirituality, a strong religious feeling. That, and others, it's more spiritual and may not be related to a more traditional religion. And we have found, as it relates to a personal moral compass, that altruism can be very strongly related to resilience. That means giving back to others can be a very healthy response to a trauma. You essentially have a survivor, you know, mission. There are many stories about that and how it's helped people overcoming trauma through their personal moral compass and giving back to others.
You especially see that in stories where families lose their children. One of the things that comes out of that often is the altruism, developing a foundation or giving back or really addressing the kind of situation that caused their tragedy. And I think what you were speaking about as far as the moral compass is concerned, what happens, Doctor, when somebody has been happy, living a good life, they have a terrible, terrible trauma, and suddenly their beliefs get flipped around where they might have thought that life was, you know, was positive, they may have been upbeat, they may have thought that there was justice or fairness. What happens to people? Do they get stuck in something like their beliefs change and then the trauma becomes much more difficult for them to process?
Yes, that can happen. You know, when you're traumatized, you realize that life is not always fair. Good people get traumatized. And, you know, bad things happen to good people. And so you can't dwell on that. You have to, you know, move forward. And even though a bad thing happened to you, it doesn't change who you are as a person. It shouldn't change your own personal moral compass. You got to retain, you know, the optimism that things are going to improve over time.
Right. There's actually a book by Rabbi Harold Kushner called When Bad Things Happen to Good People, and it's really worth reading for anyone who may be struggling with a trauma and struggling to forgive or to get over that trauma. The fourth thing that you mentioned, and after we talk about this, we're actually, time is flying by, we're going to have to take our first break, but let's start talking about supportive network, which has to be one of the key factors. I know you shared your story that was a very big and key factor for you.
Yes, it's very important to establish and nurture a supportive network. Very few people can go it alone. Humans need a safety net during times of strength. We use an analogy that everybody needs a tap code. Now, why did we come up with the term tap code? Well, among the groups we studied were prisoners of war from Vietnam, and who were held for 6 to 8 years, were tortured, and many times were held in solitary confinement, and were not allowed to talk. Well, they developed a tap code where they literally tapped on the wall, and they had essentially their own language through tapping. And they told us over and over again that if they didn't have this tap code, in which they could communicate to each other through tapping, they would not have been able to make it. And so what they're talking about is a supportive social network. Everybody needs that during tough times. You need a tap code.
We need to be connected to one another, don't we? The human condition is that we are herd animals. And I guess they say that solitary confinement is the cruelest thing that you can do to a human being, is to take them out of society, to take them away from other human beings, to prevent them from speaking and communicating. And it's obvious that that is a very big factor when you're working with your patients. Have you incorporated all of these things into the studies, and what was the outcome in terms of therapeutic value? Like if you're working with someone who has had that kind of, you know, confinement and that kind of trauma, does it help to rehabilitate, to take a certain approach to that? Is there a certain kind of new treatment you came up with regarding that?
Yes. So, you know, as we are going through the factors that we identified, and overall we now call it a resilience prescription, and we've incorporated that into how we treat trauma victims and how we treat depression. You know, all these factors, optimism and having a social network, having a moral compass, spirituality, we've incorporated all of that into our treatment of patients.
And how is the outcomes? Like, have you seen really impressive outcomes in terms of this combination that we'll talk more about after the break? Have you had good success in terms of the patients themselves recovering?
We have, you know, and we add, what we've done is add on what the resilience prescription to more traditional treatments, and they work together in a very effective fashion.
Fantastic. Well, this is really good news for our listeners who have been through trauma. Or I think we all know somebody who has been through something. I mean, you know, life is not necessarily benign, and we all, what do they say? I think it was Ernest Hemingway that said, life breaks everyone, but it kills some. And so many of us, most of us, you know, we do experience this kind of trauma. We're going to take a break. Listeners, do not go away. We will be back, and we will be talking, continuing to talk on this really important subject with Dr. Charney. Don't go away.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donatio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donatio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donatio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donatio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way. What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
And we are back with Dr. Dennis Charney, who is a researcher and practitioner, a researcher, physician par excellence. I did a introduction on him, and his credentials, his research, his experience is just absolutely phenomenal. But in this interview, we're even going to go beyond all of that, which is so impressive. Dr. Charney is an example. He is a role model for those of us who have gone through trauma, because he himself became a victim of trauma, and he's going to share that with us once we get through identifying and discussing some of the really important aspects of the research he's been doing for many, many years. So, Dr. Charney, before the break, we were talking about supportive network, but you had previously mentioned, and number five on your list is spirituality, having a structure or having possibly a faith or a practice. How important did you find that to be in the work that you were doing with your, you know, your research clients?
So we found that for some people, you know, not everybody, that having a strong religious faith where they went to church or synagogue or other areas of places of worship was very helpful in overcoming being traumatized. And part of that related to the faith itself, and part of it related to the support that you get from, you know, belonging to a religious group and going to religious services on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. So that can be very important for some people. For others, it wasn't as relevant. As we go through the factors that we've identified, you know, you don't need to focus on every factor. For some people, mm-hmm. One factor is more important than another.
So what you're saying is that these are the 10 things that stood out as the qualities that were most effective and most helpful and healing for people with PTSD. But maybe they only have 4 of those factors, or 5 of those factors may be enough for them to recover. So we don't have to check off all the boxes. We just have to look at what we know is a successful approach and maybe try that with our doctors or with ourselves to move forward from trauma.
That's right. Exactly right.
Wonderful. This is a biggie that you mentioned, facing fear. Looking at it and dealing with it in an adaptive way, that is huge. I mean, isn't that what we're about as human beings, fight, flight, or freeze? Aren't we, everything in our environment is an opportunity for us to discern and assess, is this a threat? Is this dangerous? Do I have to protect myself? So how do people who have been through probably, you know, life-threatening and near-death experiences, how can they face fear and, you know, deal with it in an adaptive way? Can you explain that to us?
Yes. Facing your fears is very important in recovery. The first thing to recognize is that fear is normal and can be used as a guide. Facing your fears can increase your self-esteem, because as you face your fears and you begin to overcome them, you're going to feel better about yourself. You can learn and practice skills necessary to move through fear. And we found this important and over again in the people we had the honor to learn from through our research.
It takes a great deal of courage, doesn't it, to be willing. And sometimes with and sometimes without medication, yes. Did you have to use a lot of medication in your studies for people who had been extremely traumatized?
It's not uncommon, because if somebody is having severe symptoms of depression or even suicidal, you know, mm-hmm. feelings, mm-hmm. if their life was, you know, very impaired, then we use medicine. And the medicine can be very helpful in helping you become more resilient. So mm-hmm. the resilience prescription works very well in combination with medicine. It's not an either or approach.
Right. So the prescription that you've written, the resilience prescription, includes all modalities that are able to support the patient in a way to have the ability to address these 10 wonderful things that you've discovered, and some may choose some and not others. But the important thing is that you pull out all the stops. You use all the tools in the toolbox. Yes? Yeah.
Yes. In fact, we call it a psychological toolbox.
There you go.
You got it exactly right.
There you go. Now, one of the other things which is terrific, and I know the story that you're going to tell, I can't wait for you to tell this story. I know people are going to be, I know I was just blown away. I read about it. I read all the newspaper articles, the magazine articles. I did some research, and it is a story. Fitness, work on training your body. Now, in your particular case, the fact that you're a very fit man and the fact that you're healthy and you work at being physically strong, this was an important factor. And then you explained to me that by being fit, it actually helps the body and helps the mind to develop resilience. So can you share that with the listeners so they can be encouraged more to go and exercise, which we always want to encourage people to do?
Yes. So attention to physical fitness, physical well-being is very important. And for example, physical exercise can have positive effects on what we call physical hardiness, mood, It improves your self-esteem. It's also been found to affect brain function, your ability to learn and remember. So physical exercise not only affects your body in a positive way, like, you know, your cardiac function and your immune function, but it also affects your thinking, your brain well-being. So
right.
It's very important.
One of the things I like to share with my patients, I say, you know, nothing in nature has a longevity without a purpose and out of function. And when you don't use your body for, you know, constructive movement and you don't tell your body that it has a purpose and that it's supposed to move and work, it kind of signals it. You know, it's kind of like everything else. You don't use it, you lose it. And exercise seems to be just such a natural appropriate thing for all of us to bear in mind as a tool for not only good mental health, but good physical health. So it's wonderful that that is one of the resilient factors, and I'm sure that many people will think twice about not exercising from that. You also talk about cognitive and emotional flexibility. This is, I love this one. This is fantastic. And you said it's how you incorporate it into your self-image. So your self-esteem and the way you see yourself and your emotional flexibility in life. Do you want to talk more about that? Because that seems like a very important aspect.
Sure. You know, it may sound complicated, but essentially traumatic experiences can be reevaluated by altering the meaningfulness of the trauma. So you can, believe it or not, receive benefit from stress and trauma. And you can do that by reframing what happened to you. You were assimilated into your life view and ultimately accept what happened to you and recover. And in fact, the recovery process can even make you stronger than you were before. Now, these skills can be learned, and it's an essential ingredient for personal growth.
Now, there's I'm sorry. You want to finish what you were saying?
I was going to give an example. I mean, for example, yeah. If a woman has been unfortunately raped, a negative outcome would be she feels guilty. It affects her ability to subsequently develop positive relationships. On the other hand, if you take the trauma and reframe it and say, look, I have no reason to feel guilty. It was not my fault. I will accept what happened to me. I will recover. I will develop positive relationships. And in fact, as I become stronger, I'm going to help others. That's the positive reaction.
Right. And reframing is something we're hearing a lot about lately. Reframing in therapy, reframing in business, looking at failure, taking another perspective of it. So the idea, as I've been told, because I have a wonderful therapist who I've been working with, and she talks about we can take a belief. And I think that this is so important because it really plays into the whole idea of our spirituality or taking a look at doing the right thing or what we believe is right. Our beliefs about something don't necessarily mean that it's true. So if we have a belief about something, let's take a situation where somebody is assaulted and they're assaulted and they say, oh, you know, if I had only left earlier, if I hadn't have stayed, you know, at my friend's house or stopped off at the store or whatever. If when we reframe what we believe, I think this is what the crux of this is. If we reframe what we believe, we can take a look at the fact that what we believe is not necessarily true. And when we can take a look at what might else be true, then we have an opportunity to walk around the situation and see what other possibilities are available. Is that what reframing is about?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the healthy approach, as opposed to being stuck in a feeling of guilt.
Right. Now, when you were doing your research, obviously you worked with a lot of people, and I know you you've been working on this over a period of time. When you have someone like, say, a Vietnam vet who, you know, these poor people, they came back to a world that was hostile, it was not forgiving, blamed them, accused them. There was so much trauma when they were in the environment of Vietnam, and then they come back to all this other, you know, social trauma. How can using something like reframing or using any of these wonderful tools, how can you walk them out of that belief that they've come to have as a result of their experience? How long does it take, and what is it like for someone who's gone through something like that? Can you walk us through what the treatment might look like?
Yeah, I mean, so it takes a number of things that we've talked about to help them recover, because, you know, you're right that unfortunately when the Vietnam veterans came back, instead of being welcomed back as heroes, which they should have been, they were not welcomed back, and so that made things even harder. But we walked them through and helped them reappraise it, just as we're talking about, that they did some heroic things when they were there. In fact, I did not go to Vietnam. I had a educational deferment, and so when I started studying and working with Vietnam veterans, when I ran psychiatry at the VA hospital, I learned from them. And I told them, you know, that in my mind, they were heroes. And I helped them to reframe what happened to them, accept it. And that helped them on the road of recovery. I reminded them that they had a personal moral compass that would not be shattered going forward. We gave them role models of individuals who had been through war and recovered, so they could emulate in their recovery. We worked to make them more optimistic and to face whatever fears they still had. So it was multiple factors, multiple approaches that we used to help them recover.
Let me ask you mentioned the veterans that you had worked with them. Is this, this sounds like such a powerful remedy, such a powerful RX prescription here. Are you working with veteran organizations or the VA I know that they still struggle with coming up with protocols, for addressing these kinds of traumas, especially people who've lost limbs and there's so much involved in war. Are you working, or have you been working, you and your research partner, with veteran groups to bring this out to them?
Yeah, well, I don't do that personally anymore because now I'm the dean of Mount Sinai Medical School, which is one of the top medical schools in the country.
Mm-hmm.
But my colleague, friend, collaborator, Dr. Stephen Southwick, still works at the West Haven Veterans Hospital. And
he's
worked
fantastic.
That for well over 30 years. So, you know, that's something that he still pays a lot of attention to, works with the veterans. So that's an ongoing commitment.
Is the hope of your research, especially in the area? I know you do a lot of work with, the veterans and the SEALs and, you know, people who have been through that kind of experience. Is one of your hopes to get this into the hands of those who are treating veterans and war-related traumas?
Yes, you know, I worked at the VA hospital for quite a while, and the VA system has done a lot of great work in PTSD. They've invested lots of money in terms of treatment programs and research. They're to be commended for that. They developed a national center for PTSD funded by the VA. So that's an ongoing commitment that the VA has made. And they're always working to upgrade and improve their treatment based on work such as ours and others.
Right. I know the I'm in the field of whole person healthcare, and I know the VA has really taken an aggressive position in incorporating whole person care or whole health care for people so that all of these factors in their lives can be addressed. So that's very encouraging and, very positive to hear because, of course, one of our greatest resources are our veterans. Now, one of the last things that you talked about was to identify the signature strengths that all of us have and to take advantage of them. Now, we're going to take a break as soon as you finish talking about that last one. And when we come back, we're going to head right into your story. But would you take us to the break with a discussion of identifying our individual signature strengths and how we can take advantage of them?
Yeah, so, we all have different personalities, different characters. And you want to take a hard look at and recognize, what are your strengths? And to take advantage of your character strengths. And when you're faced with difficult and stressful situations, you engage those strengths to help you recover. So, for example, if you're an active, person, then you want to be active with coping skills. You want to seek out others to get help. So take advantage of that as part of your character. You're not a passive person. You're an active person. If one of your strengths is you're comfortable in facing your fears, then you make that an important part of your resilience prescription. And so recognize, utilize, and foster your signature strengths as part of your recovery.
Oh, well, that's something we will all have to consider because we all have strengths, and it's so important that we call upon ourselves and we are able to tap into that. So when we come back, we are going to talk about your remarkable story and how everything that you've done. Isn't it wonderful that in life what goes around comes around, Doctor, because you've helped so many people and done such wonderful research and such great work in the world and continue to do great work in the world. And when you needed it, it came to serve you. So when we come back from break, we're going to hear an outstanding story. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way.
What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing Behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
We are talking to Dr. Dennis Charney, who is a researcher, who is an author, who is a physician, just a remarkable medical professional. He's also the dean of Mount Sinai Medical School. He has so much under his hood that it takes a long time to talk about it. He's the co-author of an amazing book. It's the second edition, called Resilience. He wrote this book with his research colleague, and it's all about resilience and what it takes and what we can know about having resilience for ourselves and what resilience is and how we can get more of it. Before the break, I said to Dr. Charney that we were jumping into his story, and we are now back, and we have about 10 minutes left. And when I was, told that I could interview Dr. Charney, I did a lot of research. I looked into the whole story. I wanted to find out, because it's such a good one. Well, it's not good in a sense, but it's such a remarkable story. Did a lot of research, read the articles, all of the newspapers and all the things that were out there, because it really is one of those unfortunate happenings in our culture today. So Dr. Charney, on August the 29th, 2016, you were going for breakfast, and why don't you take us out the door of the deli coffee shop you were in and tell us just what happened to you?
So, I live in Chappaqua, New York, and on my way to work on a regular basis, I go into Lang's Delicatessen to pick up iced coffee and bagel light on the butter. And on that day that you mentioned, I walked out of the deli, and within a few seconds, I heard a loud boom, then felt some pain in my shoulder and saw blood gushing out. Took a glance, very brief glance, to see what had happened. Saw somebody with a shotgun, and then ran back into the delicatessen, and that started my process of recovery. There were some heroes that day. The police were called. They apprehended my assailant. There were people in the deli that tried to help me stop the bleeding. Ultimately, I did a back-of-the-envelope assessment of myself and felt I was going to survive. An ambulance was called, and I was ultimately taken to a trauma center about 15 minutes away, and that started my process of recovery after being shot by a shotgun from about 20 feet away.
I mean, how incredible. Listeners, think about that. You're on your way to work. You stop by your local coffee shop. You're going to get your usual breakfast. And you walk out of the shop, and at close range, you are shot with a shotgun, which, as we all know, is pretty serious injury. What kind of an emotional, mental, physical, incredible neurological trauma that must be. And the story, Doctor, you're so funny and pretty resilient, because what you said in the pre-interview is you said, I held on to my bagel. I didn't drop the bagel, which is either you love bagels or you are one tough son of a gun. I don't know which one. You want to talk about your bagel? Did you get to eat it, by the way?
Well, you know, I found out, it turns out, you know, I was shot by a disgruntled employee that we had fired 7 years prior to my being shot. So that was caught on tape. The whole episode was caught on tape, and a picture was taken in the delicatessen, and I noticed that, well, I dropped my coffee because I was holding that in my right hand, which was, you know, where I was shot. And back in the deli was my bagel. So I ran back with the bagel in my left hand, and it shows how tough I was.
I know. That's really a great little anecdote to the story, and good for you. So here you were. And you shared with me, and it was so wonderful. You had so many of these incredible tools that is needed for resilience. You by nature, you said you're a realistic optimist. You're an optimistic person. So you did your back of the envelope assessment as a physician. You said, you know what? Okay. I'm not passing out. You know, I'm not fainting. I'm not spitting up blood. You did your assessment and figured out I'm not going to die, although we got to take care of this. So you were right away optimistic, and you said you had incredible role models. You had police officers, you had first responders, you had people who were just fantastic, showing you about courage and fearlessness and having resilience. And then you said your supportive network was incredible. You had an incredible network. Do you want to tell us about these different, steps along the way, and ultimately how long did it take you to rehabilitate, and how are you today? More importantly, you know, it was only 2016, so we're talking about a year and a half ago. Take us through the steps, and then let us know, you know, how are you doing today, and what are your takeaways from this experience?
So after I was shot, I got into an ambulance. I was taken to a trauma center, and then I was stabilized pretty quickly. And then I said I wanted to go to Mount Sinai, where I'm the dean. But there was one little anecdote that I'll never forget. So I was taken to the trauma center, and there was a police officer standing outside my room as if to protect me, you know, from any further violence. And it turns out that police officer Davenport was off duty, and he just felt it upon himself to protect me. And when my son, who's a physician, said goodbye to Officer Davenport as I was being transferred to Mount Sinai, Officer Davenport said to my son, "I just wish I was there to take the bullets." You know, and this was a police officer that didn't know me. And I like to say now, I'll never forget Police Officer Davenport. He just stands for the best of a human being.
Well, you talk about altruism. You talk about integrity and moral compass. I mean, that is an example of tremendous humanity, and certainly compassion and empathy and all the wonderful things that we look for in people. And that's a wonderful story and a wonderful anecdote. You said you had a supportive network that was really amazing.
Well, so ultimately I got taken to Mount Sinai, What really, there are many things that helped me in my recovery. One is I had great doctors. I lost a lot of blood. The pellets, you know, penetrated my lung and my liver, but I ultimately recovered physically and mentally. I didn't need surgery. Although the pellets are still in my shoulder, the supporting system, the support network I had was like unbelievable. Close family, 5 children, wife I've been married to for over 45 years, colleagues that love me. So it couldn't have been better in terms of my supportive network. I couldn't have done it alone. I had role models. Some of my role models were people I studied, the POWs, the Navy SEALs, people who were facing poverty and abuse. They were all in my mind as I worked to recover. And I also had in my mind that, you know, I study resilience and now I needed to walk the walk myself. And that was a motivating factor. Another part that was important to me was to be an active coper. I immediately developed goals for myself in terms of how I was going to recover physically, emotionally. I got back to work within 2 weeks. Gave an important speech to our first year medical students. And within 6 months, I was back lifting weights and competing in my kayak races. So those setting goals, having a supportive social network, having role models, having a positive attitude, all the things that you and I talked about today were very important in my own recovery.
I do want to share the details of your after 2 weeks presentation. You got out of the you know, the immediate situation. In 2 weeks, you were standing on your feet, and you participated. You were the speaker at the white coat ceremony for brand new medical students. This is a very emotional, very important, extremely life-altering situation. They're being invited into medicine. They're there. Their families are there. It's deeply emotional. It's deeply inspiring. And here you were standing there, giving them probably the best organic, the best, you know, real-time example of what it means to be a physician, to understand what it takes to heal, what it takes to really move forward after illness, trauma, disease, or injury. And what an incredible story that is. I think I'm sure everyone who was at that ceremony will never forget that ceremony and how wonderful that you could find your signature strengths in a 2 week period to be able to go and do a white coat ceremony for your students. Dr. Cherney, your story is just an uplifting, very heartwarming, inspiring, and of course, there's a tragic side to it too, but you know, sometimes as you said, you know, things happen, and if we can take away something really valuable from it, it becomes a blessing. What was your takeaway? What is your takeaway a year and a half later from the situation you went through?
Yeah, first I would say if anybody wants to hear and look at the speech, it's on YouTube. So if you look up Dennis Cherney, White Coat Ceremony 2016, you'll hear the speech.
Wow.
You know, my takeaway is a couple of things. One is that, you know, once you're a trauma victim, you're always a trauma victim. And so that will be with me the rest of my life. But I think it's helped me be a stronger person. It's helped me be a role model for my students and my faculty. When I talk about resilience, I talk about it from a real world personal experience. I did verify our own research, unfortunately, in a very personal way. And when I say that you can become a stronger person, if you've been traumatized, it's true. Take it from me.
Well, I am personally so grateful. I know the listeners are, that you took the time out. You are quite, as my son would say, you're a big deal, doctor. So you took time out of your very, very busy schedule. We thank you so much for you being with us today. And I'm very excited that people will have this information that they can share. Thanks again. And listeners, join us again next week for another inspiring story about living above the drama.